Ready?
Yeah.
Sure?
Yeah.
Certain?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. Although this is we're going to be changing this. We're going to have a new one of these because we're going to divide the show into two. We're going to start doing a post. I'm quiet in one ear. Am I quiet in one ear? Or is my? I think one of my ears has stopped working, Jamie. Actually, one of my ears, not the headphones. No, I think it's my ears.
Yeah, because yeah. I'm all right. I mean, even on both sides.
Jimmy might have punched me in the side of the head this morning. So we're going to do a post-fight show review today. We're going to talk about the fights last night, the Strickland-Hermanson card. So we're going to have a quick chat about that, and then tomorrow we're going to record the UFC 271 picks podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Quick shout out to the sponsors first. We are supported by NordVPN. So go to nordvpn.com/outlawed. Yeah. And the deal is 70% off. So you get a 2-year deal plus a month free for $89. And I mean, who doesn't need a VPN in the modern day? Especially if you want to be watching stuff that's been geo-blocked. Because by this point, it has already been geo-blocked, Jamie. We managed to get 2 days out of it and then they geo-block it.
And what's it on at the minute?
250,000, dude. Nice. That's 250,000 in like a day and a half. My breakdown show is what we're talking about on BT Sport YouTube channel. It has now been blocked, but you can still get it using NordVPN. So make sure you get on that nordvpn.com/outlawed. 70% off, $89 for 2 years and a month for free. And we're also supported by our long-term friends at X-Brain. I get all my stuff from X-Brain. This is my current pre-workout of choice. This is awesome. You like this thing?
Oh, is that the memory and focus?
Yeah, the memory and focus. Got a new mood. Stop me being a dick. I have that before I go to bed. Wakes me up with a big smile on my face. And I am just about to have one of these Hydra Tech. If you want Onnit products, go to xbrain.co.uk. And if you use the code OUTLAW, you'll get 10% off. I had the worst cramp the other night, Jamie.
Did you?
Fucking hell, honestly. Like to the point where there was no way I could move to stop it cramping. And it was in the weirdest place. It was like the inside of my thigh.
Oh,
honestly, both sounds sides. Unpleasant. It was like I'd been trying to control somebody in my guard for like 3 hours.
Jeez.
And it just cramped up. It was like woke me up. It was so bad. Nice segue into this. I've got to give you a box of these Hydra Tech. If you start to feel that kind of dehydration headache coming on, you just got to get one of these.
What is it? Is it like salts and
it's electrolytes. Yeah. It's electrolytes. It's made by Onnit, but it's just I just chuck them in my training bag. Honestly, like electrolytes are a game changer. If you do anything where you sweat, you need electrolytes. You don't realize how little you actually maintain the water if you're not drinking electrolytes.
They're really tasty as well, aren't they?
Oh, mate, this one's tangerine flavor. Yeah. I want it. I'm all about it.
Like sometimes when you get those kind of supplements, they're a bit like
salty.
Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, mate, 100%. There's a few that I've used and you're like, it tastes like like diarrhea medicine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, this stuff's good. And this is the Hydra Tech. Then there's the Virotech, which is good in the day and age of pandemics and all. And then there's the Alpha Brains and New Mood as well. You can get New Mood in sachets. It's a big smile.
Yeah.
Because I'm not very good at smiling. In the first 2 hours of the day, I'm a Jamie. You know this. I'm not very good for those first 2 hours. No matter whether I'm woken up at 6 a.m., I'm no good to 8 a.m. Or if I'm woken up at noon, I'm no good to 2 p.m. It doesn't matter. 2 hours, first 2 hours of the day.
It'd be a cool advert for the New Mood stuff.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah. Like before and after.
Yeah. Yeah. A two-hour video of me sitting there like, just fucking angry. Leave me alone. Drinking my coffee. And then after a New Mood. Okay, let's get into some fights. What do you reckon?
It was a good night. I mean, I wasn't that up for the event to begin with, I'll be honest.
Well, the thing is, like, there were good fights on the card. I just wasn't particularly bothered about the main event.
That makes sense.
And I kind of wasn't bothered about the main event because I like Jack, and I kind of knew that Strickland was going to do that to him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It was like,
let's just jump straight in at the top.
Yeah.
Like what were your thoughts? I mean,
I'll be honest, I wasn't blown away by it at all. It was a very stale kind of fight.
That's a good word for it. Yeah. Stale. It was like
that's Strickland's style, though, isn't it? It's stale, quite stagnant, and it's just It's not, there's nothing, and I think Felder said it quite well. He was like, when he wants to see someone challenge, they want to see someone rise, like mm-hmm. shoot straight up to the top and yeah. challenge for the title. And Sean Strickland's kind of just drudging slowly up yeah. to that point. And I thought that was a good description of, like, it kind of depicts his style as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't blown away. I thought, obviously, I thought Jack took the first fight, and I thought he looked, sorry, first round, because he was trying to stay busy and kind of match his pace. But then I think it just kind of worked against him in the end, and he was just walking onto that jab the whole fight after that.
I don't think you can fight the way that Jack does in the first round over 25 minutes. I really don't. I mean, I think you can do it for like large percentages of the round, but there are times when you have to feel relaxed and comfortable standing relatively still. And I don't think we see that with Jack until he starts to get tired, and then he's vulnerable, and then he starts to get kind of sloppy in his attack. Like, the thing is with Strickland, it's not the most elegant of styles. Like, I know he's credited for having great defense, but it's great defense because it's kind of awkward, and he pulls his head back and, you know, throws his arms out there. I feel like a good striker, not like martial arts movie striking like Uriah Hall's got, like someone like, I mean, maybe not Gastelum, because I think his head's kind of not in it, but certainly someone of like the Whittaker and Adesanya level. I just think they eat Strickland up.
Yeah.
Like, I actually think he'd do fairly well against like a Vittori or like a Costa, just because he's like a fire blanket, and they could throw loads at him, and he just does that awkward kind of everything bounces off his arms kind of style. But you need someone that's like thinking of striking like they think of chess, like they're thinking, okay, I'll use this to open up this opportunity, I'll do this to draw his attention to this so I can do this, and because there are loads of holes in his striking game. He's just not fought anybody that I think has really been able to exploit it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah. And the, because I thought he had good, he showed like good takedown defense. Like, throughout the fight, he defended every takedown attempt right from Manson.
That was something that Bisping was talking about, because Bisping's been a training partner. He's been a Bisping training partner for a few years. And the thing is as well, if Bisping brings somebody in on a regular to train with, it's because they can push him. Because Bisping gets bored with people that he can walk over. He wants people that can give some back. And Bisping was talking about how good his ground game was, and, you know, but he was also saying that all he does now is spar. And I think that might be why we're not seeing like big developments in his game. Like, he's getting better at the things that he can already do. Like, his style of striking, he can already do that. We're not seeing anything added to it. He's not adding, you know, a kicking game to it or any kind of real good clinch work or anything like that. And then when it comes to his ground, I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether he changes style regardless of his opponent. I think he just kind of shows up and he's there. He is who he is. Yeah. And I don't know if that's the way to fight at the top of the division. I think you can get a decent way by doing that. But I think when you get to a guy that like Adesanya that can, or Chidi Njokuani, 16 seconds.
Mate. That was sick.
Right?
Yeah.
Someone was taking the piss out of me in the comments because I said that I think this guy can challenge Adesanya at some point soon. I'm telling you, man. Just there's a control and a finesse to the way that he moves. I just watch him and I think to myself, he has the potential to be great, to be special. You know, Anthony Njokuani was a fantastic striker as well, and now he's in his corner. And I mean, what he did to Marc-Andre Barrio, who is a tough guy who can take a big shot and like to starch him so quickly with literally the first punch that he landed. Like, he teed him up with the first shot and then cracked him and dropped him with the second one. Yeah. I think he would give Sean Strickland problems, you know? Like, Strickland's good if he can walk you down, or like Jack O'Manson did, like you keep bouncing forward onto his jab. I don't know. I think his style's limited.
I think, you know, like that limit in style, you know how you were saying, like Derek Lewis, he's got that far just because of his, you know, his knockout power, and but he's never really worked on developing his game like someone like Ngannou has, for instance.
That's a good example.
But So yeah, so Sean Strickland's just gonna, he's gonna eventually find that ceiling and he's gonna hit it, and then that'll be, unless he does start to develop his game in other ways, then
I mean
I don't know who he's gonna fight next. I think Paulo Costa would be a pretty fun
one. Yeah. If Paulo Costa is able to make middleweight again. Yeah. But I don't think he'd take a fight against someone like Sean Strickland. I think Costa would feel like he's above that now.
Mm.
You know? I think Strickland's going to be... he's going to really struggle to get matched because everyone knows that he's a pain in the ass of a fight. I mean, look, 153 significant strikes over five rounds. He has a really high output. He's got good takedown defense. From what we hear and what we've seen little bits of, he's got a good ground game as well, solid on the ground. He might be just one of those horrible spoilers in the division, but he might also not be able to get opportunities because of that.
Mm.
The one saving grace is that now his character's starting to show through a bit. And I think, you know, love him or hate him, I think people all want to tune in and watch him because you don't know what he's going to say. He's always going to say something kind of wild.
Do you think if he didn't have that, like charismatic, well, that character.
You almost going to say charismatic.
Yeah. So take that back. But yeah, that character, like no one would be interested in him really.
You could probably say the same about Colby though, couldn't you?
I guess so, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, Colby plays that game as well, doesn't he? Where he's like, he's a, you know, he irritates people.
Mm.
That's his game. That's his thing. But I also think Colby works hard to be a better martial artist.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, and I think Strickland works hard to be as good as he can be right now.
Yeah, and I think the difference between someone like Colby, he's created that character because he knows it sells, whereas Sean Strickland's just that guy. Do you know what I mean?
He's just a dickhead. I do like how honest he was after the fight, though. Like that's one thing I did appreciate. Like after the fight, he was like, he wasn't happy with his performance.
Mm.
He said that the moment got to him, and you know, I do like that absolute honesty. It's a bit Darren Till in that way.
Mm.
Darren Till's like that. You know, he'll tell you if he's intimidated. He'll tell you if he's not confident that something's gonna work or whatever. You know, that'd be a good fight.
Yeah, Till. Yeah.
So what next for Jack Hermanson then?
Oh, I don't know. Let me have a.
Can you get the rankings up?
Yeah, because he was six going into this, wasn't it? Strickland was seven. So I think for Hermanson, like someone like Uriah Hall, maybe a good one.
Oh, yeah, internet's working again.
Yeah, something. I'm on the BT one.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Wonderful. At least one of them's working.
But yeah, I can't really see Hermanson getting back into that title run. I think he's kind of hit his ceiling.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to be touching that top four or five again, I don't think.
What about Hermanson Costa?
Yeah, it would be a good one.
Because the thing is, if you look at who Hermanson's fought, there's definitely some opportunities to fight some of these guys in this division that he hasn't faced yet. I mean, like Hermanson, Derek Brunson, he's a good shout. Yeah. I know Derek Brunson's matched up against Cannoneer at 271, isn't he? But there's going to be a lot of shaking up in this division in these coming weeks. Currently, I've got Strickland at seven, right? Same as you. Mm-hmm. Seven and Hermanson at six. So they're going to switch places. That puts Strickland right below Paulo Costa, but Costa's going to try and talk his way into a fight up the food chain. He's probably going to try and get the winner of the Jared Cannoneer against Brunson fight, I would think. I think he'll try and talk himself into that.
Yeah, he's got too much of an ego to take someone below.
For sure.
Below
him.
Yeah.
But I could see Strickland against Vittori. That'd be a banger. Yeah. And both of those guys have got a very similar style. Like, you look at what Vittori did to Hermanson, you know?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a good one. I also think that Hermanson would have a good shot against Derek Brunson, based on the way that Brunson fights.
Yeah.
He's reckless driving into the double leg, and I think Hermanson with his Joker scene could be a problem. He's still up there competitive, but there's just things he needs to do to develop his game.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have the right game plan against Strickland, whether that was by choice or by error.
Yeah, I feel like he... Because he was looking for the takedowns, but Bisping was saying it didn't seem like he was fully committing to them.
Yeah.
Like, it was more a strategy
Go on.
Strategy
yeah.
to wear him out.
Yeah. Which I don't know why he would have made that decision, whether he felt like, I mean, for whatever reason, he felt like he wouldn't be able to hang with Strickland on the floor, or whether he didn't want to burn that energy trying to get him there and fail over a 25-minute fight, because Strickland has got, you know, good conditioning, as we know. It was just a weird one.
Yeah, the one thing I did like was at the end of the round, and Strickland, he didn't, like, sit down or anything. Like, at the end of every round, he was just like, and Eric Nixick was coming in, he was just like, gave him, like, 10 seconds of advice, yeah. And that was it.
Did you hear, was it at the end of the fourth round? Like, I think Strickland came back to his corner, and one of his teammates, was it Chris Curtis, was shouting at Eric Nixick.
Yeah.
And Nixick just like looked back through the fence, and he went, I can only tell him so much.
Yeah.
And Strickland was already, like, out in the middle of the cage, like, looking at his opponent.
Yeah.
I don't know. He has the potential to grow on me, perhaps. I think if he can work his way into a position, his banter with Adesanya might be quite interesting.
Yeah.
He's just one of those heels of the division, isn't he? And he's got a heel kind of style, a bit of a Chael Sonnen kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, Chael Sonnen would drown people in a very kind of slow and disinteresting style, but he would do the talking, and it would get people watching his fights.
Yeah.
I think middleweight's looking really good right now. I'm all in on Andre Muniz, who's ranked number 13 at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think he fucking wrecks this division.
Yeah.
I think he does. Okay. Mate, how good was Chidi Njokwani?
Oh, he was brilliant. I was not... Because I didn't look... I mean, I looked at the results, like who won and who lost, but I didn't look at, like, the finishes or yeah. And yeah, that was so good, man. I think I picked against him as well, didn't I?
I think you did, yeah. Yeah.
Where is it?
I wasn't...
Yeah, I picked Barry Holt, yeah.
Yeah, did you? So yeah. I was a bit worried in the Phil Rowe, Jason Witt fight, because I thought that was going to start creeping away from me. And then Phil Rowe was able to pull it back. And I picked Rowe in that one. I think we both picked Rowe in that one, didn't we? But then the one before that, I was very disappointed. Because I was really excited to see Dennis Bondar in the UFC. Like, I was enjoying his highlight reels. Like, he's got this... I mean, his nickname's the Psycho, and like, it really fits. It really suits him. So, did you see where it happened? So
yeah, it says he was... he posted up against the fence, and he was getting back to his feet, basically, wasn't it?
So that was the point where it dislocated and stayed dislocated.
Yeah.
So the point where I think the damage was done, when he was caught in the armbar triangle.
Right.
And okay. I think Malcolm Gordon had cranked and armbarred him and dislocated it, but then in the scramble it had popped back in. And then when he posted on it to frame, that's when it dislocated. Something similar happened in a ONE Championship fight recently, where the guy, do you remember? And they took the fight down off the ONE Championship YouTube channel. I was trying to find it.
Oh, I think, yeah.
The guy had his elbow dislocated, it popped back in, and then he framed on it. And that's when it popped. Mm. I was disappointed because I was excited to see Bondar. I hope he gets healed up, but he does look very fucking dislocatable, doesn't he? I mean, he's really bony.
Yeah, I thought that. He's got a very, he's very bony structure to him.
Yeah.
And it did start off exactly how I thought as well, like a mad scramble, and like, I thought the whole fight was pretty much going to be like that. And it was. I think it's just unlucky. Like, I'm... Like, making your debut and that happening, it must be, like, so shit.
Yeah. But I do think, because I'm going to watch it back a couple of times, I do want to give Malcolm Gordon the credit for doing the arm, though. You know what I mean? Because I feel like sometimes in these scenarios, like, the fact that... I mean, of course he didn't get the submission, but technically he did if he did enough damage to get the fight finished.
Mm.
You know? Like, if that was... If he was able to snap the arm... and the referee had seen it while he was in the submission, it would have been a technical submission, would be what it classed as, instead of a technical knockout. TKO don't really make sense with that one. Hell of a performance.
Yeah.
And Phil Rowe as well. I was very, very impressed with him. So what about Jailton?
Jailton, oh yeah.
Did you not pick Danilo Marquez?
I picked Danilo Marquez.
You were all about the... Although you did go Alexis Davis, so you do get one back for that, right?
No, I went Stolyarenko.
I said
she was going to catch her with a submission.
Yeah,
there was a few times there was. She had a few armbar attempts.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, Alexis is just way too experienced, and she just wasn't going to get it, was she?
Just too wise, isn't she? She's just too... She... Yeah. there's a lot to be said for that amount of experience that she's got.
Yeah.
And maybe Solyarenko is just not quite, she's not quite ready for the UFC, you know? I mean, what was it? 9-5 going into it, was her?
Yeah, she's 9-6 now, yeah.
Yeah, she could probably do with going and picking up a couple of wins.
But Geraldton, I thought, looked wicked. So right. strong. Like, yeah, massive guy. Both of them were massive anyway, but the way he controlled him and like got the finish was ground and pound, wasn't it? Because they turned the volume up on the hammer fist, and I just think he looked. Because I thought he was going to suffer from a little bit of like lack of experience, but he is the more experienced, like record wise.
Yeah,
and I think he showed that, and he controlled him, and yeah, got a really good finish.
Scary dude.
Yeah.
Scary dude for light heavyweight. 6'3", 79-inch reach.
Mm.
Like, you look at the light heavyweight division, and like, I could see him. I mean, he's got two wins if you can't count his contender series win. Like, you look at some of the guys in that bottom 15 of the UFC, the likes of Jamal Hill, Ryan Spann, Jimmy Crew, Ion Cutelaba. Like, Ion Cutelaba would look really small by comparison.
Yeah.
You know? And he's kind of reckless. That might be a good... I mean, obviously, we're rushing him a little bit here, but I think he's got a lot of potential. I mean, size-wise, skill-wise, you know, what, he landed 30 strikes and didn't take any.
Mm. And the ease of the takedown as well. Like, you just seem to, like, ragdoll him around. And, you know, it's not as if you find someone that's, like, undersized or anything.
No.
It's like...
No, Marquez was a... Is yeah, he's 6'6".
Yeah, he's 6'6".
Taller guy, but with a shorter reach.
Yeah.
Hakeem Dawodu impressed me.
Yeah,
I thought Trezano was going to outpoint him. I underestimated Dawodu's fight IQ, and Trezano was the one that ended up chasing him.
Mm.
It was like he was always a step behind, and even when he went back to his corner at the end of the second round, and they were like, "You've got to go and knock him out." Like, you can see for the first like 90 seconds of the third round. He's really trying to get himself going, and he just keeps getting stifled and stifled. That would look really good.
Yeah.
And I want to see him get some finishes, though. I would like to see him step outside of himself a bit.
Yeah. You know? What do you think that is? Do you think that's like a lack of power or just...
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I don't know. I think everybody of... sound health and athletic ability has got the power to knock somebody else out of a similar size to them. I think when it comes to like Brandon Moreno trying to knock out Ngannou, I think that's when we're really going to start to run aground. But there's no reason why Dawodu shouldn't be able to knock people out in this division. I mean, featherweights knocking each other out, you know, consistently.
Yeah.
He landed double the amount of significant strikes, 141 significant strikes to 70 for Trezano. Like, you've got to think to yourself, if you're landing 140 strikes, you need to be trying to instigate a finish with some of those shots. You need to be trying to figure out what targets you can work on that are going to start to break your opponent down. I think a lot of people, they go, oh, I need more knockouts, and they try and think that's one punch. And almost all knockouts are not one punch. Like, even we've just done the Taito Avassa war room. Even he's not knocking people out with one punch. Mm. Like, it's sometimes a third, fourth, fifth. Against Augusto Sakai, it was, I mean, what, 8 punches into that combination where he landed that right hand? I think sometimes these guys, they hope that they're going to land the big shot, and they get too obsessed with throwing singles. We see it at the gym all the time as well, don't we? You know, guys, they want to land that perfect shot. And I think Dawodu's a little... Like, he is very quick and he is very skilled, and I think he knows how good he is.
Mm.
You know, it's a bit like Yusuf Zalal. You know,
yeah.
Similar kind of thing. I totally believe that he's got the ability to knock people out, but I just don't think he sets his feet.
Yeah,
I don't think he creates the physiological conditions to knock somebody out.
So do you think it's a technique thing more than because I mean. Because you can get knocked out with not even that much power, really. If it's placed well on the right spot, you know, you're out anyway. But,
I mean, you're talking featherweights. Like, there's no reason why Dawodu can't muster the same kind of power that other featherweights would. Like, you look at the guys in the fight after this, John Castaneda against Miles Johns. Like, everything that those guys threw sounded powerful. They're bantamweights. That's a division below. that was a really impressive performance. Yeah. I thought Miles Johns was going to crack him with a couple of shots and hurt him. Castaneda looked like a top dog in that fight.
He did. I thought he looked like Miles above Miles.
He did, didn't he? Miles above him. Yeah. I can see for miles. No, he did. He did. He did look. He did look excellent.
He just looked like really confident. He didn't look scared of like Miles's power. And then when Miles was throwing big shots, he was reading, slipping out, and landing some really good like shots.
Yeah.
And he got a submission as well, which kind of shows his like diversity within his, his fighting. So. Yeah, I thought he looked wicked.
I was well impressed with him. I was well impressed with him. I like both of those guys. I think Miles Johns, he's had a bit of tough luck. I don't think that was bad luck. I think that was a good fight to learn from. But I do think he's got a lot of potential to regroup and keep making waves in this division. I mean, he's clearly a very powerful puncher, but he's stopping people in the later rounds.
Yeah.
I can't take anything away from Miles Johns. I just think it was a really, really good performance from
Castaneda. Yeah, it was slick, wasn't it? It was like someone, when I was watching him, it was someone like I would be watching. They've had loads of experience. They look really comfortable in the octagon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, you look up this division, and so what is your bantamweight? Like you look inside the top 15 at bantamweight, and you've got, I mean, a Sun Sao and Song Yadong are very, very tough fights. Ricky Simone, but you can see him creeping his way into this division, can't you?
Yeah,
you could see him in there against a Marlon Vera or a Pedro Munoz or someone like that, for sure. Maybe another 18 months time, I think we might be seeing him breaking that.
I think a good fight would be him versus Bontorin as well.
That would be a good fight. Yeah, and Bontorin's coming off a loss, isn't he? Although he's quite up the division.
Yeah, he's number 7. I just think, like, he's a similar...
You never know when these opportunities are going to land.
He's a similar styled fighter to Miles. Like, it's kind of short, stocky, big power.
Yeah.
I think he'd be able to deal with a lot of the guys in the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mate, and Julian Arosa. I know it was a split decision, but I'm just such a big fan of his. He's awesome, isn't he?
Man, I don't know what he's made of, but Jesus Christ, is like the amount of punishment he takes and just keeps coming. It doesn't even look like it. It phases him when he gets like hit. It's crazy.
He's like a reed in the wind.
Yeah,
you just crack him and he just bounces back. Yeah, such a difficult style to read. And so much experience as well. I mean, he only just outlanded him. You know, what was it? 155 to 148 significant strikes, but 3 takedowns.
Yeah.
I'm a big Julian Arosa fan.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of those guys that's it doesn't matter who he's fighting. He's always going to give him a tough test. You could call him up on a week's notice and put him in there against some of the top guys in this featherweight division. Like, I mean, you know, you look at, like, so we talk about featherweights. Arosa and Dawodu.
Yeah.
Would be an interesting one. But at this point, I would feel like Dawodu would give him enough time in the fight for Arosa to find his way in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Arosa's got enough experience and enough trickery in his game to be able to capitalize on someone like Hakim's game. Like, Arosa's one of those guys that always finds himself counted out because he's... I don't know. I mean, he's a bit kind of like he was in the UFC and he was out, and then he's born in the 80s. He's kind of getting on a bit in his career. He's just a difficult guy to kind of place in the division.
Yeah,
but you can't ever count him out.
Yeah, I thought Steve Peterson was it you thought? Yeah,
yeah.
He had his moments, but I think when he was getting on top. Like, Arosa is just still there, and you just can't get him out of there. And even if, like, you just give it your all, you still can't get him out of there. I feel like that's what happened to Peterson. Like, if he was fighting someone else, he probably could have, you know, won or, like, had a bit more of a advantage. But, yeah, it's just, I just couldn't get over how, like, how many shots he took, how much punishment, and he was just still there at the end. It was crazy.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for fighting loose, fighting relaxed.
Yeah,
like it's the same as Shavkat Rakhmonov, isn't it? Like he's like what was it that Bisping was talking about in the commentary? He's just so relaxed.
Yeah,
he's just
that
so
emotion.
Calm and so that was the conversation they were having.
Yeah.
And then Felder went off throwing a whole bunch of different words at him. Calculated. Yeah. It weirdly reminds me of Stipe in his style, though.
Mm.
Like, you know how he like stands like heavy on his rear leg? And he's just kind of, he's patient and he's calm and he kind of edges his way into range without really overextending himself.
Yeah. I feel like he's got, like, even when he's won the fight, he's still got so much more to give. Like, I don't think we've seen, like, the full, like, map of his game or whatever. Like, I think he's still got so much more to offer.
Which is terrifying because he's, what is he, 14-0 with 14 knockouts now?
I think it's 15 now, yeah. Now.
Jesus.
Yeah, and they're all 15 finishes. 15, yeah,
and it's not like he's stopping, you know, easy fighters as well, like Prezeris and Cowboy Oliveira. They are not easy fights. Oliveira as a UFC debut, and you know, first and second round stoppages as well. I can't help but daydream about the idea of him one day facing Khamzat Chimaev.
Mm.
I mean, because we've got a similar kind of phenom. The difference is that Chimaev's outspoken. That's the only real difference. Like, Shavkat Rakhmonov doesn't say anything. You know, he's kind of quiet and smiley, whereas you've got the ice mesh, yeah. You know, talk from Chimaev. I think Chimaev's a bit further along in the, you know, in his career, perhaps, as far as his success, but... I mean, what similar records, similar position in the UFC's eyes, at least. I think it'd be a
he's only 27 as well, Shavkat.
Yeah.
Rakhmonov, 27.
6'1", 77-inch reach.
The thing I love about like guys like him and Khamzat, it's like they're... It's like they're not living this like dream of like, oh, I want to be UFC champion one day kind of thing. It's just like it's almost expected that they're going to be champion. It's like, yeah, I'll be a champion. Like,
yeah.
I just love that like cold. And the same with like Shavkat. It's just, there's no emotion. It just goes in there. It's so precise. Doesn't waste energy. And it's just done.
Mm-hmm.
Over. Like yeah. It's almost just expected.
So there's no play in his game. Mm. Like with Khamzat, he'll play up to the crowd, like he'll carry the leash across the, you know, across the cage and stuff. But exciting times, man. I mean, the welterweight division, like you've got to think if he's on the rise and he's outside of the top 15 right now, like, and then you look inside the top 15 and you've got the likes of Khamzat Chimaev on his way up and Sean Brady, you know, like the new wave of the welterweight division. Like, I think some of these guys, I mean, Salakov's down at the bottom at number 15, Ponzinibbio and the Leech, Jeff Neal. I mean, you can see Rakhmonov just marching his way through a few of those guys, can't you?
Mm.
It wouldn't surprise me if we see him in a bottom end top 15 fight in his next two fights, for sure.
Yeah.
Neil Magny would be an interesting one.
Yeah. I think like that lack of emotion is such a powerful attribute. Like a lot of those guys, like I don't know, you just see him like facing up and like if he was facing someone like Sean Brady or Stephen Thompson, I don't know, there just seems to be an element of emotion tied in with them as like fighters, whereas people like Khamzat and Shavkat, they just don't have that. So there's no, it's like they don't set themselves up for disappointment, I guess.
Yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's a really like powerful attribute, and it can take you like a long way.
Yeah.
Even if you're not as like technically as good or whatever.
But yeah. That's what's scary about this guy. So he's at what, 8 knockouts and 7 submissions, stopped everybody. Like the furthest someone's got into a fight is 3 minutes and 3 of the third round, and that guy was stopped in the third round. And that was the welterweight title on that particular show. He's just a scary individual.
Yeah.
And it's variety as well. Triangle chokes, guillotine, rear naked choke, a punch to the body, 2 retirements, a triangle, a guillotine, a rear naked choke. And then obviously against Carlson Harris, the spinning hook kick that started it, which kind of didn't land clean. It was a bit more of like the... like the JDS kick on Mark Hunt, where it kind of skimmed across the top of his head and like sent his equilibrium spinning. But oh man, I was very, very impressed. And then the next fight I enjoyed as well, just purely based on the wrestling exchanges. I felt like I could watch it a few times and learn a few bits from it. Because, I mean, I thought Soriano started off really well. I think he was kind of a bit looking for the perfect shot, for the perfect punch. But his takedown offense looked great. Mm-hmm. And then that knee injury happened. Did you see that, where he was almost in a complete split? Yeah. And like you saw him twist and like screams, and after that he just didn't seem like he had the, you know,
the edge. Well,
I mean, they counted 11 takedowns for Nick Maximov, even though he was outlanded by Soriano. So Soriano landed 45 significant strikes to 29 from Maximov, but then Maximov has registered 11 takedowns in that fight. I don't know how they come to these takedown stats sometimes, you know. I'd be interested to get like a group of MMA wrestlers together. Like some of the top, you know, some of the top boys, get DC and the likes in there, you know, Gaethje and Gregor Gillespie, and you know, have a bit of a a bit of a conversation about what should be classified as a scored takedown in MMA, cuz it's different to wrestling. It's different to any other kind of combat sport. Like, I think you have to be able to take them down and secure a dominant position, otherwise it can't be counted. Like, you can't be counting a takedown where someone sat on their ass against the fence.
Yeah.
And they, you know, immediately pop back up to their feet. Like sometimes the takedown stats are, like, a good example is Rob Whittaker against Darren Till. So he was scored as failing two takedowns in the first round. But if you watch them, the first takedown that he attempts is after he got caught with that massive elbow and he wrestles up to a single leg, right? Yeah. So although, yes, I guess technically he was on a takedown attempt, it was probably because he was trying to clear his head because he'd just been dropped with a massive elbow. So is he actually trying to take him down, or is that a recovery process, which I think is arguable? And the other one in the first round was like Whittaker was backed up against the fence and Till was driving into him, and he kind of hip tossed him to create some space. Again, purely no intention of putting the fight on the ground, but just trying to make some space. But that was counted as a takedown as well. And I don't know. I just think you have to, like, he only had one submission attempt recorded. Like, is one submission attempt and 11 takedowns, does that outweigh the additional 16 significant strikes that Soriano landed?
Yeah.
You know, and how do you start dividing those fighters up? Like, at what point does Soriano's significant strikes outweigh the 11 takedowns and the submission attempt from Maximov? You know what I mean? Like, there's some things that aren't quite ironed out yet, I think.
Because if you get a takedown, but you're not in, you don't end up in an advantageous position, then, or they get back up to, or like when Soriano's kind of like, he wasn't like fully down, or it's like you're just in that position to not get in danger.
Exactly.
It's like a safe stalemate position.
Because like there were a few times he had a thigh pry, like a switch, and he was hooked on the leg, and then they're both kind of stuck there, like, okay, you go first. No, you go first. Because I mean, like, his scrambling ability was really impressive. He was able to keep Maximov moving in some really awkward positions, positions that a lot of fighters would have struggled and would have been stuck in. All until obviously the knee injury, and then I think the strength in his movement was compromised. But I don't know. They're just odd fights, because you could have 10 people score it, and it could be 50-50 the way that they scored. I mean, that was a split decision, you know, as was the main event.
I know, because I was a bit, because one of the judges in the main event scored it, like, was it
49-46?
To Hermansson.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't know how. But then they were so different from the other two judges. So it's like, I don't know whether it's, maybe it's the angle they're sitting, or like, it's strange. I don't get how it can be, two people can say it's such a clear decision and then one person not.
Mm. I just don't think three judges is enough.
No.
I mean, Glory used five judges. I think that's a good idea, because then at least you've got five opinions instead of three. Even if it's a split decision, you're still going to have two against three. You know, it's still going to be you're still going to have two people making an argument for one person winning.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's 1-4, You know what I mean? Like, that's a split decision in MMA, but that's not a split decision with five judges.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I still think there's some work needs doing with the judging criteria. It is a little bit vague in some ways. I see judges that are equally well trained and experienced have different opinions on the same fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a job I'd like. We just need to talk about Brendan Allen before we wrap it up.
Yeah, because he stepped in last minute, didn't he, for Phil Hawes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I thought Sam it looked
good. Yeah.
I feel bad for him, man. I mean, he's got that kind of suicidal psychopath smile on, and he's recorded a couple of videos afterwards. Did you see on his Instagram?
No.
Yeah, they were kind of sad about reassessing and not sure what comes next, and horrible place for him to be. I mean, yeah. He's on a hell of a losing streak, isn't he? Was it six or seven fights now he's on, or something like that?
So it'll be a seven-fight losing streak now.
Fuck.
Yeah.
And that was the first time he was subbed as well, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. No, he lost to Marquez via rear naked choke as well.
Of course he did. Yeah, of course he did.
But yeah, I thought...
Brendan Allen looked good.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I did think he rushed in a couple of times, though, and he did almost get caught.
That's the danger of Sam Alvey, isn't it? He kind of hangs back and waits for the opportunity.
Is that Bisping, or was it Bisping or Felder said they trained with him once, and he has got, like, unsuspectful, like, power. You don't expect it, but...
Yeah, he's a training partner of Felder's, wasn't he, Brendan?
Was it Felder?
Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean Sam Alvey with the power, like unexpected power.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Oh, no, I think Bisping sparred with Sam Alvey.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
I think
yeah.
Bisping, because Sam, I'm not sure whether he still trains there, but he used to train at the Team Quest in Temecula, which was the one that Dan Henderson set up. So it's kind of Southern California, would have been fairly close to Bisping. Plus he's, you know, bounced up and down between weight classes. So. I don't know. I just think that... Is he going to keep adding stuff to his game? Is he going to keep improving? I just don't know as he is. Mm. I think you can always put him in there and he's going to have a banger, no matter who he's up against. But he's only going to keep taking damage, and it's not going to be a good look for him or for anybody else.
Like, you've got to have people there to almost advise you in a way where it's like, you know, maybe you should look at not doing it anymore. Not because you've lost a love for it, but just purely for a... You know, your health and your stability and stuff.
I know, and he's got hundreds of kids as well, hasn't he? He needs to reserve some energy for looking after them. But like then you look down further on, you know, on the card. So like we had the other light heavyweights on the card. You imagine Jelton Almeida in there against Sam Alvey.
Jesus.
That just wouldn't be right, would it? No. Brendan Allen's obviously a middleweight, so he's heading back down again, but like you don't want to see Sam. I wouldn't even put Sam Alvey in there against Chidi Njokwani after that 16-second knockout. I think Njokwani had starched Sam Alvey at this stage. I feel bad for him, but I think it might be time.
Yeah, it was good win for Brendan though. Like he looked good, even though he's like stepped in last minute at light heavyweight.
Yeah,
pretty cool like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we wrap it, what are your unofficial picks for main and co-main next week?
Oh,
dropping it on you.
So co-main.
Yeah.
I'm going for Derek.
Oh yeah. Do you think he's going to stop Ty?
It's going to be a knockout.
Yeah.
Like, but I think Derek Lewis is going to get a knockout. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Derek Lewis is like a bit of an anomaly, isn't he? Like, there's people like the Daukus fight, like technically should beat him every day of the week, but he's just got that. And I think probably it's when you get in the octagon with him and you're like across the octagon, then it probably hits you like shit. He's got the most knockouts in the UFC.
Yeah. I bet he's got a fucking presence when you're in there with
him.
Like he's got those, like of course he's a big joker, and do you see he took his cup out? Was it his last fight against Daukus? He took his cup out and threw it into the crowd.
Yeah.
like I think people, they see that kind of stuff and they're like, he's a big softie. You know what I mean? He's like a big joker. But then when you get in there and he's standing across and he just starts doing that chest beat.
Yeah, he's got the beast on his chest. Yeah.
He's got knockout king.
Oh, is it knockout king? Yeah, yeah.
He's got knockout king there and he's got hard times tattooed across his stomach. Yeah, The logical way to go is obviously Derek Lewis is going to catch him at some point, but I keep thinking to myself, you know, Taito Iwasa, he's in a different stage of his career. I feel like he's not got as one side of a game as Derek Lewis has. Like, Derek Lewis will throw some flying knees and some high kicks and stuff, and, you know, he has got ground and pound finishers against Abdurakhimov, I think it was. But it's not like he's a double threat. It's not like Ngannou. Like, Ngannou right now would take Taito Iwasa down and beat him up on the floor. I don't think I'm gonna see that from Derek Lewis.
No.
You know? And I feel like Taito Iwasa's also got good kickboxing knowledge based on his time training with Mark Hunt, who's also got a win over Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
By beating him up and knocking him out in the fourth. I'm only wishful thinking, because I would actually really like to see. I don't really mind either way, but I think that Taito Iwasa, to get this opportunity right now, he'd go to 15-3. You know, he puts himself right up there amongst the heavyweight division. I mean, you know, we've got Aspinall headlining London with Volkov. Like, you look through this division. So where are we right now? We've got Pavlovich, Walt Harris, Ivanov, Sakai, Tuivasa, Aspinall, Tibora, Abdurakhimov, Daukus, Rosenstroik, Volkov, Blades, Lewis, Miocic, Gunn, and then champion Ngannou. Like, you could quite easily put Taito Iwasa in there against a whole bunch of them. Like, I could see him knocking out Volkov. I could see him catching Volkov.
Yeah.
You know, I could see him. I think he would struggle against Rosenstroik based on Rosenstroik's striking pedigree. I think Blades would take him down and probably maul him on the floor. But the other guys, fancy his chances.
Mm. One thing I would say about Tai is that, like I was saying about people intimidated by his power, I think Tai is probably someone who isn't intimidated by his power. Like, he'll go in with the intention to knock him out and might get knocked out himself whilst doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would bother him.
No, but then he's never been knocked out. Yeah. So then he's got that confidence as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. And he took a big shot from Greg Hardy before
he
knocked him out. So yeah. Yeah. The thing is, I like both guys, like, personality wise as well. It'll just be a fun fight just to watch the build up for it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but I'm gonna pick Derek. Yeah,
I'm kind of glad it's not over five rounds, because I don't want to see either of them holding back, because it's an additional 10 minutes of work. Yeah. What about main event?
Oh.
Do you keep bouncing back and forth? What's your gut? Okay, gut and heart. What are they saying? And head.
Oh, all of them say Adesanya.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. So
if Whittaker's gonna win, how does he win then? If you're in his corner and you're confident Adesanya's going to win, what do you tell Whittaker to do to make sure he don't lose?
Well, based off what we've seen of Adesanya, like his like the holes in his game, I'd take him down and try and submit him,
yeah.
or just keep him down and avoid the striking.
Yeah,
but yeah. I just I'm a big fan of Adesanya. I think he's great, so good, like technically striker. Yeah. I just can't really go against him.
Do you think he'll be able to stop Whittaker taking him down, or do you think he'll lose rounds from being taken down?
See, I think, like, in the fight against Blachowicz, he was obviously undersized, so I feel like he struggled more being able to defend the takedowns, whereas I think because Whittaker's not got that size advantage, he'll be able to defend the takedown better.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think he'll be able to avoid that long enough to... A bit like the Vittori fight, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that was smart, because he's... Like, once he was taken down in the first round, he was like, I'm going to stay against the fence where I know I can defend these takedowns. And after that point, it was a real smart fight. But I feel like Whittaker's got more facets to his game than Vittori. So I think hanging back against the fence and allowing Whittaker to kind of take control of the center would probably not suit him quite as well as it did against Vittori. But I also don't think it would suit Whittaker to be standing in front of him being hittable. Like, I have a feeling that this might be two guys circling one another and neither of them wanting to step forward for fear of getting caught by the other one. You know, it might be a bit of a slow start to this one, bit like Adesanya against Romero.
Yeah.
Like, as much as we're all wanting a striking extravaganza where Whittaker tries to grapple some as well, I feel like it might be a bit of a standoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just can't. Yeah. I just can't see Whittaker.
Can't pick
against. I mean, I know. No, I can't. I know you said, like, he was in a different, like, mindset mm-hmm. for the first, going into the first fight. And I think, yeah, if that changes and he doesn't necessarily, like, rush in and, you know, he's a little bit more patient, a little bit more strategic, then I can see him doing it. But, yeah, I can't pick against Adesanya. No. I just think he's just striking wise, like smart, like fight IQ. I just think he's way ahead yeah. of most people.
The big question for Whittaker, in my eyes, is how did he deal with the first fight? Like, did he watch it? Has he watched it a bunch of times? Does he understand what happened? I spoke to Ben Askren after he got knocked out by Robbie Lawler just before he fought Damian Maia. And of course, you don't need to rewatch your Robbie Lawler loss to get ready for Damian Maia because they're very different problems. But he didn't know why he'd been knocked out by Robbie Lawler. He'd not watched it and not researched it. And I know a lot of fighters, like Ronda, was the same situation against the Holly Holm fight. She didn't want to watch it. Like, that would be a real risk because then the benefit in watching it is to work through the anxiety attached with it. Like, of course, you're gonna get knocked out. You're gonna watch yourself get knocked out. It's gonna be unpleasant. But if you can apply logic to it and strip it down to what actually happened and take the emotion out of it, then you're not taking the emotion into the next one. But if he hasn't watched it, and if he's still got that in his head psychologically, and it's built up, and he steps in there against Adesanya, and all of a sudden he's back in the Marvel Arena with 57,000 people, and he's getting knocked out. He might unravel in the first round. I mean, we really don't know. It depends on how he's handled that first fight and what he's done about it. But it's a hell of a fight.
Yeah, it would set it up for a good trilogy, obviously.
That is very true. That is very true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, what a matchup.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll wrap it there, shall we? We'll get the 271 we're recording tomorrow. So make sure you do check that out. Veronica will be joining me for that. And we'll be talking through with the whole UFC 271 card. Thank you for joining us for the Hermanson Strickland review show. Check out our sponsors, NordVPN. Go to nordvpn.com/outlawed, 70% off, 2 years and a month for $89. Make sure you get on that. You can check out anything that's geo-blocked. You can protect yourself as you're traveling with your VPN, etc., etc. And check out xbrain.co.uk for all of your Onnit supplements in Europe. Neuroptimax is amazing. This comes in pre-mixed drinks as well. You've got your shots and your sachets and all kinds of stuff. xbrain.co.uk, use the code OUTLAW and you'll get 10% off. Nice one, Jamie.
Nice one, man.
Good to see you.
Cool. You too.
Catch you next time.